I pledge
allegiance to
allegiance
the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Okay, looks like we have one public beforehand. Okay, yep. Yeah, so who's going to... Okay, Dave. Yeah, there you are. Hi, Dave. How are you? Sorry. Good, thanks.
Good evening. I'm Dave Franick, Chair of the Historic Preservation Commission, and I'd like to thank the Village Board of Trustees and the Village President for your support over the years. The HPC, which is a volunteer group of seven, gives awards periodically. We have six potential awards. They are described on the village website in some detail so that people can use that as both a guide for applying. And we're here tonight to present the following awards for 2023 and 2024. They recognize and celebrate the homeowners for their preservation efforts. I'm going to go back. There you go. They were first presented in 2009. The commission was formed in 2007. We've given 29 total awards. There are six different categories. In some instances, the homeowners have been sufficiently excited to retain their signage for several years in front of their homes, which is nice, which is nice. Okay. The first award is the Streetscape Compatibility Award that goes to Andrew and Laura Matruck for 210 Gale. What they did is they have a beautiful Victorian home. You can see it on the right. They tore down their existing rather nondescript garage and replaced it with something that is absolutely, it's a mirror image of their home. So congratulations to them. The Streetscape Award is meant to recognize people who, through their preservation efforts, including renovations and reconstructions, do something which is fully in keeping with the look of the built environment in their neighborhood.
There she is.
Hi, Laura. Congratulations. The next award goes to William and Jennifer Dugan. It's a renovation award for 727 Keystone. It is difficult to tell where the original home begins and the renovation begins. You can sort of see it extending the bump out. You can see a little bit on the left. It extends fully over to the right. As someone who owns a stucco home, I can fully attest to the difficulty in matching that seamlessly. They really did a tremendous job in that regard. But the renovation award is meant to recognize someone who expands and blends in seamlessly with their existing construction. Now, we have the 2023, the Laurel McMahon Restoration Award. This is one of the two major awards we give. And we give it to Keith Strom and Lisa Rodriguez. The reason for that, if you look at the lower left, that is a photograph of the site circa 1900. If you look above that, you can see the way the home existed at the time they purchased it. And now you can see the way it looks now. With the exception of a couple of things which didn't meet current building codes, they were able to fully replicate what had been there in the past. So. Kudos to them. It's really very difficult to do what they did. And they did it with a spirit of completeness that's really quite remarkable, hence the McMahon Award. And finally, Alex Milling and Bob Dolhide, the Renovation Award for 1411 Keystone. I believe they're here as well. It's a rear addition and exterior renovations. If you look on the left, you can see sort of a clapboard bump out. And now you can see what it's been replaced with. Again, it's a brick addition, which expands the building square footage, makes the building much more usable. But what it does is completely seamless. You really cannot tell. And again, with some instances, brick is very difficult to match. Not in this particular instance, but some of the homes in our area have a tan-colored brick that's known as Milwaukee Cream that has not been produced for decades. There's one instance where we did, in fact, give a restoration award for someone who was able to replicate that. So, again, kudos to the owners. It's really a great job. Any questions?
Yeah. No, it looks fabulous. Thank you. I mean, it's so great.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Do we post the award winners and like the before and after pictures on the historic preservation section of our website?
Yep.
I think there is a section for it, but it's currently done. I'll create a page if there's
time. Yeah. Yeah, we have, and it's a great question by Katie. I know we have, so we should probably, that's a great point.
I think it would be useful for residents who are thinking of renovating to see how others have done it and to see what's been, you know, appreciated and noted. And, you know, they can take it from there in any way they want. Thanks.
Yeah, one of the things that we have, we've got two actually extraordinary resources on the website. One is our survey as posted in 2013. We completed a survey through the use of two architectural firms, one in Chicago, one locally. They responded to an RFP. We got dozens of responses from all over the country. We brought in three firms to, including one from Tennessee, to give presentations. We picked, as it happened to be, the folks locally who did an exceptional job. And that is online, and it lists our 296, what we refer to as significant homes. Those are either architectural or historically significant. That is a designation that's based upon the criteria established by the Secretary of the Interior and the federal 1966 Federal Historic Preservation Act that lists basically eight criteria that are used. Additionally, one of our newest commissioners, Brian Moore, a little over a year ago, was able to put up on our website an interactive walking tour where you can take a look at a map, you can click on it, you can see a little picture of the home that's represented. And you can get a little bit of a description as you walk around the village. So you can do as much or as little as you like.
Well, that's a great idea.
But it's the idea is to be educational, to be a resource, and to recognize the fact that we are really part of the same community. We're just more than a bunch of investors who happen to have homes next to each other.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, we should make it as robust as we can, you know.
And you said one of the awardees is here today?
Well, I think two.
If they don't mind standing,
yeah,
so we can give them their recognition, so please.
Yeah. Is there anything you guys want to say, I mean, about the project, anything that you want to say?
Yeah.
Well, you got to just come up to the podium. Huh? Yeah. Laura, do you mind so that people can hear you?
Yeah.
I mean, because we'd love to hear your story, I mean, briefly, but love to hear it.
Our garage required a variance. So thanks for the variance.
You're welcome.
And Grant Moore, for people who are trying to do the right thing for their historic properties. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes it's not in the books, but sometimes it's worth going outside the code to do the right thing.
Right.
Yeah, that was definitely the intention, was to create a flow. So the second structure just worked with the house, which we, again, brought back to the original design, or what we were able to obtain.
Yeah, great. Well, it looks beautiful. So thank you for pushing us. Because I've shown Do we have plaques that we're going to give them, or just pat on?
We have both a plaque as well as a metal sign.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we just want to thank everyone and the commission in particular for the award and recognition. It does take a lot of effort to match all the brick and the molding, and but we really wanted to make it look like it was original. So thank you for your recognition.
Yeah. Thank you. It looks beautiful.
Gorgeous. I wanted to say thanks also for the commentary about the community and about the big picture of why this is important and to the work that the commission does. And just, yeah, with thanks to everyone who is a part of this community and those of you who are serving the community. So thanks so much to everyone.
Well, thank you to you guys, too. Thanks.
Yeah, it really is a something that people gravitate towards. I know I always put out the maps of our historic homes whenever I have an event. And those are the things that are taken the most so that people can do walking tours in their own river forest. So just thank you both and the commission for the work that you do.
Yep.
Yeah, over the years, I know I've said this many times, but I think many people who do not grow up in river forest come to our community for probably two out of the following three reasons. One is obviously the proximity of the city. Another is the extraordinary educational system. But a third is the incredible inventory we have of exceptional homes. The quality and variety and vintage is something you really can't find for love or money in most places. And I think people who grew up here don't really quite have the full appreciation of what exists here between the crescent between Oak Park, River Forest, and Riverside. It really is an extraordinary collection of homes from, 1875 to probably 1935, 1940. It really does stand out. There's a reason why when the Frank Lloyd Wright Trust does their Wright Plus Home Walk, they sell out in about 6 weeks to get people to go into 8 private homes, 1,500 tickets sold worldwide. There's a reason for that. And I think everyone should be congratulated for their efforts, including the trustees and the village president, to help us to retain what we have and to allow people to continue to live in those homes.
Yeah, that's great. It's really great. Really appreciate all your work and all the commission's work. This is exactly what our community is. So certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I'm glad to hear that there's going to be something that they can put up and people can see. And
absolutely.
And we'll try to do our best on the website to make it more robust and
right.
Inviting, which is a great idea. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Thanks. Thanks, Jan. Yeah. All right. And we'll move on to citizens' comments. So we only have... I'll let you guys kind of move out. Okay. We have Debbie.
Good evening. Debbie Borman, Lathrop Avenue. I have one question for the board tonight, and that is regarding the neighborhood dialogues. I'm curious to know whether the contract with Jess Kolka and Associates has been extended beyond the October 30th expiration date? And if so, what date has it been extended to? And how much is it costing? How much extra additional money is being paid towards this endeavor?
Okay.
So the contract has not formally been extended. The scope of work with Jaskolka Terman included 6 to 8 neighborhood dialogues. There have been 5 held so far, and we're working to schedule a few more to meet the work that was included in the scope of work. So there's been no additional extension or additional cost beyond that original agreement.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll go to the elected official comments and announcements. So if I can maybe start with, do you mind?
Sure, no problem. I have no comments. I've been under the weather, but I wish everyone a happy Halloween coming up. Also, as we noticed with the stickers, please don't forget to vote. It's always important.
Great. Thank you. Kid?
Thanks. I have a follow-up question about the residents' question about the neighborhood dialogues. If the contract ends on 1031. Is the plan to have the remaining meetings prior to 1031? I can't imagine that's going to be the case.
No, we're looking at dates in November. We're hoping to have the three additional scheduled before Thanksgiving.
So if the contract is supposed to end 1031, how do we handle that?
Well, the work hasn't been performed by the consultant yet because we haven't had the date. So we've been having an open dialogue with the consultant to go beyond that date.
Okay, so we don't have to do anything to enable you to continue to have the neighborhood dialogues beyond the contract.
Correct. There's no additional cost or anything for extending that.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
No.
Oh, nothing else. Okay. Thank you, Katie. John?
Nothing to add. Thanks.
Okay. Rez?
Okay. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I just have two items. The first is I did participate with the River Forest Township and Arbor West Neighbors on the housing tour that was afforded to the community on October 19th. It was from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. We started off at the River Forest Community Center. They pretty much presented some of the services that are offered to our older adults. One being the joint partnership we have with Oak Park Township regarding the simple home maintenance program. So we talked about that. And then we did end up visiting a few places with Altenheim, the Victory Center. We also went to 222 North Marion, which is an intergenerational building. We also went to the Landers House, which is a condominium. We also visited a three flat, all in the family combined unit. And then we also went to the Oak Park Commons intergenerational co-housing. The idea being the type of housing that's afforded for our older adults. So it was a pretty good experience, and I'm glad I went, and everyone found it very productive. Other than that, just happy Halloween to everybody, and hopefully you'll have a safe holiday. It's supposed, a little cooler, but hopefully sunny. So thank you.
Thank you, Rez. Lisa?
Just a couple things. In addition to having a happy Halloween, let's be safe. That means if you're out after dark, please wear reflective clothing, bring flashlights, look both ways when you cross the street. It's amazing how excited kids get when they're out and about, and we just want to make sure that there's no unintended accidents. Yes, I'm expanding on the need to vote. November 5th will be here before you know it. Please vote early. If you can, just to avoid lines, you can vote early in Oak Park, Elmwood Park, and Maywood. I had heard rumors that it was really, really busy when it first opened up. I went today in Maywood, and it was a breeze. The folks couldn't be kinder. Third, I want to say congratulations to River Forest local residents who own a kitchen and Spoke Cafe for pulling together on their own an extraordinary fundraising event for Beyond Hunger. It was held at the Depot parking lot. It was called the River Forest Fall Market. It was really, really great to kind of speak with a lot of River Forest businesses as well as businesses in the surrounding area, and I do hope it becomes an annual event. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Kirk?
I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We'll remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. I believe that each of us were invited to a run-walk for Hepzibah late in the week, last week. And so they had theirs yesterday, Sunday. It was a wonderful event. It's the third time they've done it, started in Constitution Park. For folks who don't know, Hepzibah is Oak Park's oldest social agents service agency, and they help children in need for therapeutic residential treatment, foster care services, and foster parent training and licensing. So just a wonderful organization, fun event. School of Rock was there. I got a thing from Novic Orthodontics. Lots of wonderful sponsors, and thank you to everyone who puts that on. It was a really great event. Also wanted to note that in working, continuing to work around suicide prevention, along with the River Forest Township and District 90, there will be a suicide awareness prevention for men's mental health resources that will be scheduled at Willard School in the evening on December 11th. So as more details come, I will provide that information, but maybe we could also just be on the lookout and post in all our places. Glad to see that our township and other bodies, taxing bodies where this is relevant, are coming together to help with this really important issue. And I would say too, for voting, if you can't early vote and you are still registered somewhere else and you want to still vote in River Forest, you can day of, and I think it's just provisional. You might have to bring your driver's license with you, but you can vote day of here in River Forest. You just want to make sure you go to the right precinct, look all that information up for your address. And for Halloween, happy, safe Halloween to everybody. Maybe for folks who have kids, just a reminder to them, lots of, if they're interested in the tricks rather than the treats, we have a lot more houses these days with cameras on their system. So, you know, it's not worth the 5 seconds. So maybe just a quick 1 minute conversation with your kids on that. And then also just generosity of whoever comes to your door. And, you don't know their background, but if they're trick or treating, like, just be generous and don't refuse anyone. So
great reminders. Thank you. Okay, just a few things, not to repeat, but yes, the Hub Kitchen and Spoke Cafe, what a wonderful fall fest, I think it's called, and hopefully it will be annual. The hope is to make it the next Oak Park, you know, market, so it's a good start. They had a lot of great vendors. The food was phenomenal, so, you know, we'll continue to hope support them. I also was went to the League for Women Voters for River Forest and Oak Park. They had their gala 100 years celebration. It was great. I mean, it's amazing what that league has actually done to advance women's rights and women's votes. It's just really quite impressive. So I'm really happy I was part of that. And then last, I just read, I might have the dates wrong, but something I think is so cool. I think the PTO, D90 Sustainability Club, and I think Good for Green, Green for Good, sorry, I got that wrong, it will do a pickup of pumpkins if you put them on your curb. So they will pick it up, and they will actually compost it for you.
Is that supported by the Pumpkin Smash?
Yes, but they'll pick it up for you. So we'll make sure that gets in the newsletter, but I don't know what day they'll put it out. But I think it's the best. And thank you for those groups and those sponsors for pitching in and doing it, because that's half the battle, right? It's getting the pumpkins to the smash. So the fact that they'll pick it up was a great thing.
Good reminder, too, for folks not to put the pumpkins in the roads with the leaves,
right?
Which I've been seeing.
Right. No, and you're right. And I think that's what people are doing. So hopefully they'll put it on the curb separate from the leaves, and they'll get picked up, hopefully. At least that's what I've been told. Okay, so that's all I have. We'll move on to the consent agenda. If I can get a approval for the consent agenda A through F.
Can I, Kathy? I'm going to refrain from A and B because I didn't make it. The minutes part.
So do you want to remove that? And,
yes.
Okay, we'll pull B. A and B.
And B.
Yes.
Guys all know. Okay, motion to approve the consent agenda items C through F.
there a second? Okay, thanks, Eric. Okay, so any questions or comments regarding those issues? Or if not, I'd ask the clerk to spell out the items and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item C, administration department report. D, authorization to sell surplus property, public works vehicles ordinance. E, general fund and capital improvement fund budget amendment ordinance. F, purchase approval, Stalker Radar MC360 message trailer, $20,355. Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes. Okay, very good. So then we'll need a motion and a second on the two items A and B.
Motion to approve the consent agenda items A and B.
Mm-hmm. I hear a second. Second. Okay, very good. Thanks.
And then just so everyone knows, aside from Trustee Gillis's issue, Matt wanted everyone to know that the minutes were amended from what was originally in the packet. So it's the motion is fine, but just so all the board members are aware that you're looking at the more recent.
We sent that out, right?
Correct. That's right. Hard copy that's okay. So everyone is aware of that.
Okay.
Does this hard copy have where the edit was made, or is it just included without?
Redlined. There's additional information in regards to the tennis club notification area. When the board discussed it, just clarified some of the comments from that, and then additional comments about following the audit presentation.
I should note that I also was not present at the last meeting. So be refraining as okay. Well.
So I guess as a point of order, are we not supposed to vote on the minutes if we weren't present at minutes were taken?
It is legally permissible to vote on minutes that you did not attend. In my experience, trustees typically like to abstain if they weren't there, but it is not required. You may vote.
I do. Okay. So, okay. Any further questions? But they're quick questions. Hearing none, I'd ask if you could read it out loud and then take the vote.
Consent agenda A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, October 14th, 2024. B, Village Board of Trustee executive session meeting minutes, October 14th, 2024. Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis? Abstain?
Yep.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Abstain.
Then you need me.
All right. President Adusi?
Yep. Yes. Okay. Very good. All right. We got through that. So we'll go on to item 8, which is the recommendations of boards and commissions and committees. So our first one, should we take them first? One at a time.
Do you want me to make a motion?
Yep. One at a time.
Okay. I move to approve an ordinance granting the requested variations to sections 10-8-4 and 10-8-5 of the zoning code at 7618 Vine Street.
Second.
Okay. Just presenting this. No, well, who's presenting it?
Provide an overview. So for
provide an overview.
Sure. Yeah. There's proposed, the variation is for proposed addition to the home at 7618 Vine Street. The variations are for lot coverage and floor area ratio. The Zoning Board of Appeals voted 5-0 to recommend approval of the variation. There were no neighbor concerns or comments for this request. That's all I have. I'm happy to take any questions on the application.
What was the percentage? Remind me.
I have it up here.
It was like
2.81.
And then it increases 3.9 to the floor area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Insignificant.
Does the resident want to speak?
Yep. Do you want to speak? You don't have to, unless you want to present something that. Okay. Maybe get to the podium and just say, you know, maybe why you're looking for it. Looking for the little bit of the
background.
Just a little bit.
Okay. Yes, we are looking to expand on the back of our home. Right now, we love the home. We love the neighborhood, but we'd like to kind of bring it up to more contemporary standards in terms of space. And because of our, we're on a substandard lot, so we meet that ratio sooner than we otherwise would. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But maintaining the integrity of the neighborhood and the traditional stucco homes, things like that. Very, we're adding just enough space.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good to me. Any questions for our neighbor? Okay. Then let's take the vote.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Okay, approved. So congratulations. Look forward to seeing your new addition. So thank you. Okay, so we'll move on to the second motion. If I can get a trustee to move in a second, we'll talk about it.
Move to approve an ordinance granting the requested variation to Section 10-8-5 of the Zoning Code at 7611 Washington Boulevard.
Second.
So this variation request is a tad similar to the last. This is for a construction of a two-car garage on the property. There is not currently a two-car garage on the property. This is also for lot coverage. This is a request. 30% is the restriction in the R2 district. This request is to bring it to 32.07, so about the same increase of the last request. This was also approved unanimously by the Zoning Board of Appeals. There was one condition that the ZBA placed on their recommendation was to require a grading plan, which is just reaffirms what our requirement is for projects like this, because there was a comment from a neighbor concerned about drainage issues with the addition or with the construction of the garage. Yeah. So that will be required. The applicant's already been informed of that requirement.
Right. And everybody was okay, the surrounding neighbors?
Yes.
With that update for mitigation.
Right.
Correct.
Correct.
And I don't think the resident is here, right? Okay.
No.
That's fine.
I'll speak on their behalf, just in case somebody is thinking going negative. This is a uniquely challenged property. Number one, it's a bungalow, so it's a one-story home, so all the square footage is on the first floor. And secondly, that street is notorious for not having enough room for garages. So I think it's probably fair that we give them that opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that an alley street?
It's a problem. So it's like an end cap. It faces Washington, so the north-south streets kind of eat up where you could potentially put an alley. You understand what I'm kind of talking about? So if you slid an alley behind there, you'd have to take it out of the side yards of the homes that are to the north or to their entire backyards of all those homes along Washington. They just don't go deep enough. Yeah. And these homes were all built before people, excuse me, you know, they were horse stables 100 years ago. So things change.
Yeah.
We want people to build garages. Yeah. I think it's the right thing to do. Right. And it's only 2% over small. Sure. Okay. Any further questions? Hearing none, let's take the vote.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, the last one of recommendations from the committee was a text amendment request. So if I can get a motion and a second, we'll discuss this.
I'd like to make a motion to approve an ordinance amending the village code regarding the regulation of electric vehicle charging stations. Second.
Seth, thanks.
Um, So this was initially brought to you all, I believe, in the second meeting in March. It had been discussed by the Sustainability Commission prior to that, and then finally got to the Zoning Board for their September meeting. So this initially took the suggested sort of model language from the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus EV Readiness Cohort, took the feedback from the Sustainability Commission, the feedback you all had presented back in March, and then there were a couple of minor clarifications from the Zoning Board. But yeah, this achieves every code change to address the required zoning requirements and anything else that would need a change to village code for bronze, gold, and, or silver and gold designations for the EV readiness cohort.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions?
So are these changes, this might be what you just said, but you went fast, so I'm catching up. Are these changes that are being proposed bringing our code up to allow River Forest to qualify for all three, bronze, silver, and gold?
Yes.
Or will there be a... Okay, you've answered the question. Thank you.
Yeah, and I believe I included just a condensed version of the chart that just addresses the zoning issues and then some of the other things relating to parking and new construction somewhere in the packet. So it does address all of those that were included.
Okay.
It also, this section also talks about five additional charging stations in various locations in the village. Have those been identified yet? The locations?
Is this for the grant that the village is receiving for the charging stations?
I made a note, it was on page 66, maybe, or after page 66 in the packet.
Yes.
Talked about five additional charging stations in various locations. I just wondered where those were going to be.
I do not see that in my... there is a plan. The village did receive a grant to install, I believe it's 9 total new charging stations at 3 different village-owned lots. That's sort of separate from this program, so that was through an IEPA grant the village was awarded.
So, Katie, is that in that document you're saying? 66.
Well,
okay.
I'm not sure if it's on. I made a note about something else on page 66, and it was right before this note, so I know it's after. It's 66 or after.
Okay.
It's tricky because we can't really do a search within the these documents. It would be lovely if we could.
Yeah, this version somehow didn't come up searchable.
So let's see. That address that, I agree. 66. See it?
Reference on the memo to 6 additional items to receive silver designation. That's when I search additional, that is what comes up.
How can we have 2 documents here?
I'll ask a question while some folks are searching for that too, because, and actually I'm kind of having a hard time finding it now too, but it may just be because it's all running together. Did I see correctly that any new construction then will require to have parking that includes readiness for electric?
Yes, that is correct. That is a gold level requirement for any commercial new construction. This was worded to be non-residential, to be as all encompassing as possible. So the language we used was the lesser of 20% of all available parking spaces or 6 parking spaces to be EV ready,
right.
Which means that there needs to be enough of an electrical load and then wiring run to an outlet or a junction box for the future installation.
Gotcha. And so when we say new construction, if there is, let's say, like a building and they are redoing their front or something like that, but they've got parking in the back, are we going to, like, what do we consider new construction for this purpose?
That is a good question. I believe my understanding is that it's a building of a new facility. Does that?
I'm sorry.
What constitutes?
Well, how do we define new construction?
Is it qualified net new, ground up new construction, or is it a renovation?
Right.
Yeah, I think our building permits are, we have a separate building permit for a new construction as opposed to remodel or renovation. So I think that's how we would define that.
The definition of new construction that's already in place.
Okay, so
it usually is based on a percentage.
So let's say Dominican University puts up a new facility or something like that. Are they going to be required to put 6 new charging stations somewhere?
If there is parking for that new facility,
if the facility requires parking,
correct,
right?
Okay, thanks.
I found the place in the packet where that brought this question up. It's on page 72, and it looks like it's just one page out of the notes from a Sustainability Commission meeting. It says, a discussion ensued regarding how many charging stations would be added to the village. Management analyst Jansen responded that there would be 5 additional charging stations installed at various locations. And then in the next paragraph, discussion ensued regarding the specific questions about the location of the charging station. So I'm curious as to where those charging stations would be.
So I believe placed. That is in reference to that was sort of got sidetracked into the conversation about the grant we received through the IEPA. And that would be, there will be 5 dual port level 2 charging stations going in at the West Metro lot. There will be 2 direct current fast charging stations at the Village lot on Franklin Avenue, a block over this way, the 3-hour parking lot. And then there will be 2 additional direct current fast charging stations going into the Village owned lot immediately adjacent to CVS at North and Thatcher.
So this whole piece is about the IEPA grant?
No, that's completely unrelated to this.
It's just
came up during discussion.
Happened to come up in the discussion.
So that notes that should happen.
And I'll add on to Seth's comment that the contract for that will be subject to board approval. So right now we are currently interviewing consulting candidates to oversee that project. So that will come back for Village Board approval.
That was just awarded officially at some point. I think that was probably even when it was just an application being submitted to the IEPA when this was discussed. So, or if that was the zoning board, that might have been, they just had questions about that.
I see.
Unrelated to this. So.
Thanks for that.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Any further questions? Okay. Hearing none, we could take a vote.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I think that concludes those recommendations. So of the zoning board, now on the Sustainability Commission, we have a discussion of the recommended gas-powered leaf blower regulations. There's no action, just discussion. So, Seth, you're there already. So,
yep. Yes. Actually, I turn that off. So this began. This was briefly discussed last year with the Sustainability Commission after Oak Park had passed their ordinance. It was raised again by one of our co-chairs, I believe, back in our April meeting. Wanted to have further discussion in May. To walk you through the whole process over the past few months. So discussed it in more depth in May and used Oak Park's ordinance as sort of a starting point. For your awareness, it starting next June fully bans the use of gas powered leaf blowers year round. So really wanted to use that as sort of the basic template of where do we start from? Here's the town next door doing this. Sent out information and a survey to all of the landscape contractors licensed with the village to get their feedback, invited them out to the next meeting. The survey results are included in your packet. It was, I would say, universally negative. 4 of the contractors came out at the next meeting, as well as 1 resident who spoke out against the ban. some of the contractors were just, I would say, dead set against it from the start. Others raised some just legitimate concerns about the cost of the batteries, the battery life, the battery power, and then the difficulty of needing to recharge the batteries when moving from site to site throughout the day. That was most of the discussion at the June meeting. The commission discussed it more in July and August, started formulating new ideas, tried to think of taking some sort of phased-in approach, as well as offering some sort of incentive to early adopters to sort of incentivize landscape contractors to make the switch earlier. So they eventually came with two proposals. One was sort of a phased-in seasonal ban, and then the other was offering a rebate on to landscape contractors for their license fee if they sort of electively choose to make the transition to electric earlier, and then in hopes that there would be resident interest in those, we would list those contractors on the sustainability page of the village website. Provided additional notice to contractors. Two more contractors came out at the September meeting, again spoke against it. The commission discussed it further, or maybe it was the August meeting and they came out. I'm mixing up my timelines. But at least as an initial first step, what the commission agreed to put forward was this. I forgot to add that the community survey that went out in September also included to residents about sustainability, also included questions about leaf blowers, and those responses are also included in your packet. Roughly 50-50 split, I'd say a slightly higher plurality were in favor of a ban, and then a small fraction wanted a ban only applying to landscape contractors and not residents in general. But as a sort of initial first step, the Sustainability Commission wanted to move forward with the incentive piece, and then at least something to temporarily address the noise issue, which was the largest issue raised by residents in the survey, the only one I believe that surpassed 50%. And that was basically to seasonally for the time being mandate that gas-powered leaf blowers are not run at full speed during those summer months from June 1st to October 1st. So that was sort of the steps in the process that it taken thus far.
I have a question. How much are we talking about for that reimbursement? How much do they pay per year for a license?
So the annual license fee is $125. So if every contractor were to somehow participate, that would be an annual loss of $8,000 to the village as a whole. So not a big amount. I would guess if this were enacted, there would be a single digit number of these contractors to actively seek out that reimbursement.
Yeah.
I have a question. You may not have checked into this, but are there long lasting batteries out there? I mean, it is a credible argument that it would just run out and you wouldn't be able to cover.
There is not really. Most of the feedback, most of the information I've been able to find, it's about 45 minute battery life. And then for the sort of battery operated backpack blowers, the heavier duty ones, it's you need two batteries to get to go at full power for that same amount of time. So yeah, the charging difficulty and the technology of the batteries was, I'd say, the most common legitimate concern raised. And that sort of coupled with a lot of them don't have charging capability in their trailers when they're moving from site to site. So it's difficulty to, you know, be able to recharge and reuse the same battery. So they would need to buy additional replacement batteries.
And from what I understand, Seth, you probably have some awareness of this. There was in the northern suburbs a regional working group across several different municipalities around leaf blowing regulation. And so what they found, they put out a report late 2022 that you would probably have to buy like six battery packs or something, right? So the idea of like how much a company would have to put up first mm-hmm. is something like $11,000 yeah. to be able to go electric with them. And so like it's significant, right? The $125 doesn't really match with that, yeah, but that it's saying it's
what incentive could have been.
A couple of the things that the report also said was that at some point, I don't know if it's still available, but there was like an EPA grant for a diesel emissions reductions act that people were using to do like trade-ins for. So, you know, somebody would bring in their gas leaf blower and then like a company, and then you would get some sort of stamp or some sort of thing that said it's been destroyed, and you would provide them funds to replace it.
I am unaware of that specific grant. I do know that the IEPA had developed a statewide climate action plan and received, I'm not exactly sure what the federal grant was, but one of the components of this, and this is a 40-page long document, this is two paragraphs in it, is to develop a statewide grant program for the replacement of gas-powered landscape technology to help cover that conversion to battery-operated technology. Hmm. They don't expect that grant program to be up and running until 2026, but that's...
What it seems that is good, what kind of like the tack that you're taking is doing something that's phased in, which I think is really important. So we're not like freaking all the vendors out. You know, it's not a shock to their system or to their pocketbooks. And so as much as we can do that, one of the things I've seen too is that there's like a couple of different kinds of gas leaf blowers. One that's really inefficient and bad. I think that's like a 2-stroke engine, and one that's better, that's like a 4-stroke engine.
Yeah. And I had looked into some of the clarification on 2-stroke and 4-stroke. I did find one ordinance. It was in another state, just trying to find any sort of examples. And it was getting really into the weeds of one of them. I believe it's 4-stroke is the larger ones.
Yeah.
Can only be used in like industrial areas zoned within the village, and things that got a little too complicated. I did, after the instructions of Wei to sort of address the noise and the speed of the leaf blowers, find there was a town in New York that had used the specific half-speed, full-speed language. And so that was at least the model of that one small provision.
Is the idea of doing that during the summer months, is it because it's hotter and so the pollution is worse, or is it because they don't need it as much as they do? Like,
it's the latter. So the feedback gotten is that battery powered leaf blowers don't have the power and the capability to do the fall cleanup. And then I guess there is also a significant spring cleanup that occurs as well, that the contractors say they need the sort of full power, full strength for. So, and these were this June 1st to October 1st was Oak Park's previous time frame. Yeah. I know Riverside is also considering one, but they are, I believe, just looking at July 1st to August 31st.
Gotcha. I've got one more question.
Yep.
Something that I haven't noticed before in our conversations, there are leaf blowers that are like leaf blowers / pest control. And so the pest control part of it is like a mist of things. So like, would we also ban those for pest control?
That is a good question. I was unaware of that. I had not considered that. Yeah. So
just like a different kind of contractor who would be using a leaf blower, but in a different way. Mm. Okay, thanks. Yeah.
So Seth, I'm unclear. Are we looking at a proposal for contractors in River Forest to be able to use gas blowers during the spring and fall cleanup, but electric during the summer months when it's lighter, easier to blow?
That was what was sort of the interim thing put forward by the commission. That was still met with resistance, I'd say, from the contractors and, again, citing the battery-operated stuff. So what was settled on here, what was put forward, is the gas-powered leaf blowers can still be used in the summer months, but they cannot be used at full speed, at full strength, to limit the noise is the primary factor of it. But
I would say we've got residents, based on the questionnaires to the residents, we've got 77% of residents are concerned about all of the aspects of these gas leaf blowers: sound, particulates, health, et cetera. Some of them have a little concern. Some of them have moderate concern. Some are extremely concerned. 77% is a really high percentage. I'm not surprised that the contractors don't want to do this. Of course not. And maybe we can do something to help out in terms of, rather than kick this in January 1st of 2025, maybe give it a year or so for them to phase out their gas blowers. They have to buy new equipment anyway. If they have a year or so to plan, then they can factor that into their purchasing and business decisions, knowing that if River Forest is going to ban gas blowers, at least during the summer months when you don't need it. I did read the contractor comments, and most of them, you know, said we need the gas blowers when it's wet in the fall and spring cleanup, not so much in the summer.
And that was what was initially, or the sort of intermediate before initially taking the Oak Park template in the Oak Park ordinance and then getting that initial feedback. What was then put forward by the commission was this sort of phased in half speed for 2025 and then starting summer of 2026, all electric. I would say that was still met with resistance is what how we came to this sort of final recommendation from the commission.
Yeah, sure. And I would expect that resistance. Although I will note that these contractors, for the most part, are probably operating in Oak Park. So they've already got to change over their equipment for Oak Park.
Right. I think.
I would propose that we ask the Sustainability Commission to look at, you know, a requirement that they change over to electric other than the spring and fall, heavy wet leave situation, and maybe starting in, the end of 2025 or the beginning of 2026 so that they can factor this into their purchasing and business decisions.
I was just going to add on to that. I also think we have to look at other municipalities and learn from them. You know, the fact that Highland Park, and actually most of the bans, and I last looked at this at the end of 2021, the only Illinois, places that had banned in any way, shape, or form, and in Illinois there were no complete bans at that time, were on the North Shore. And they obviously then put forth a point of view, because there is a discrepancy in terms of the business owner and what they need, what the residents need, and that kind of thing. But have we spoken with Evanston? Have we spoken with Wilmette? Can we speak with those, learn from Oak Park, certainly, because they're going complete ban, but then learn, just find out what their learnings are and not be, kind of starting over. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, I can definitely reach out to those communities. And
I know the city of Evanston had approved incentives to kind of cover the costs in line with what Trustee Bachner had shared for all of their contractors, mm-hmm. which I think they had estimated the cost to be about $300,000.
I think we have to look at what worked, what didn't work, where are they today? What do they wish they'd done differently? I don't want to, I want to kind of not fast track this, but I want to fast track our learning so we can make the best decisions that we can.
And I have another thought about the suggestion that they can only operate at half speed in certain seasons. That would be a nightmare to enforce. Yeah. It's just not going to happen.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So why draft an ordinance that's unenforceable?
Right. And that was going to be my point, is that, all that will do is create more resident concerns, right? Because they'll call and say, hey, they're 100%. And then you get out there and they're at 50%. And you can never really.
Yeah. The final report it's not worth it. Came from the group of North Suburban towns. Has a lot of decent information. Like part of it is like, how do you enforce that, right? and it's not like 100%, but they give recommendations on those kinds of things. So it may be worthwhile just to.
Okay.
That would be an interesting to read that about how enforcement, because that, I agree, that's a big issue. Now, remind me, Seth, when is Oak Park? They're going to start January.
It's June 1st of next year. June 1st, yes.
All right.
And I had read it was January 1st, 2025.
June 1st, 2025 is, I believe, what they're
ordering. And they're going to go full force year-round.
Full force year-round.
Yep.
Okay.
Hmm? Did you say, Lisa?
I said it.
Yep.
It is full.
Okay. Can I ask you a couple words? I think, did I hear correctly, this, if there's a ban, it's only going to apply to the contractors?
No, the...
Or is it going to be for residents?
Portion would be universal, so...
for everybody.
For everybody. Yes. Okay. And there was in the community survey included an option of ban only for landscape contractors. There was less than 10% of the residents who had responded to that survey had indicated that, as opposed to a universal ban or no ban at all.
And Oak Parks is both.
Oak Parks is both.
Okay.
It's universal.
I think, definitely. Looking at the past or looking at other communities would probably address the wet argument. I'm sure it would address a lot of things that we can address so that we don't have these discussions about the batteries. And I think it's a good argument, but if there is a better argument that's out there that's been in use for whatever amount of years, it shuts that down. So I think that's a good idea.
So did the sustainability look at any other community other than Oak Park?
So the initial discussion was to based off of Oak Park's ordinance and sort of go from there. And that was really the starting off point. So, yes, it looked at Oak Park's. I not looked at.
But some of those, the ideas for the draft ordinance that ended up getting recommended for approval did come from some other municipalities.
Yeah, that was just sort of general research. Yeah.
So it sounds like what the trustees are suggesting is that there's a lot more communities out there that are seeking or using this. So.
Well, Illinois and outside of Illinois.
Hold on. Let me ask this. Was there any financial studies done if you do ban it? Will the cost increase? I don't know. Do people know, and this is a question, that if these contractors are complaining about the equipment and having more to spend, they're going to pass it on to the residents, I'm assuming, who use that. So when they're asked the question, did they realize what they were answering? Because sometimes people don't think about the cost. They just think, yes, I want to cut on the noise. But if it means I'm now going to pay a lot more for it or whatever the price is, would they have changed their answer? I guess because I'm learned that when people, we put the surveys out and the questions aren't there, more residents are going to come here when you try to do something or ban something like that. So I just want the full information out there. So people, when they're answering the question and we're being asked to vote on something, I know I want to have the full scope of everything.
Yeah. And there was not any sort of full comprehensive study. Anecdotally, when landscape contractors come out, the commission had asked them their experience in terms of, you know, were they intending to pass on the cost if they operated in Oak Park? I know one of the contractors who came out at the first one said that he just stopped working in Evanston when they initially passed theirs. But yeah, it was very anecdotal. So the second time when there was two contractors came out, there was one larger local contractor who stated they've been able to sort of absorb the cost because they are a larger operation, have not had to pass that on to Oak Park. The other one had said that they were raising their prices for Oak Park residents, and they also were feeling that their quality of service, particularly in the summer months where a ban already exists in Oak Park, had gone down. So that was just sort of the anecdotal information I'd gotten from contractors.
Okay.
I was just asking how many people did we survey or how many responded?
I think there were about 115 responses.
For the residential one, there was like, 100.
So do you think that's statistically...
It's not a huge group. There was, there were like, I believe, 57 contractors that it was sent to for the contractor one, and we got about a third of them to respond. So that was, I would say, a pretty big chunk of them, all things considered, took the time to.
But that was the contractor. The resident.
The resident one was,
133.
Based
on How many?
And that was just through promoting it through the newsletter and social.
So would you call that statistically?
Very small.
Yeah.
It's very small, but is it statistically significant? Yeah. I mean, there's.
I would not venture to guess myself.
The percentage is probably something we should all also look at. I mean, based on potential surveys and potential return, I mean, if it's less than 1%, it might be insignificant. So something you guys got to look at.
I think so. For me, a phased approach to help contractors get, moving into it. I do think that this is the way we're going, right? Like, the writing is on the wall, like it's going to happen.
Yep.
Can we be on the front tail of that to help, River Forest with our sustainability? And then looking into grant programming and funding to help with like buybacks and things like that for, especially, minority business owned, women business owned, companies as well, small business.
It sounds like consensus, and maybe even all, is agrees that this is the future. And we need to get there. The question is how quickly or how slowly, and at what cost, and how do you enforce something that that's going to be required? So, I mean, a lot of moving parts, but no doubt, I think we all agree that this is the future, and we need to figure out how to get there.
Yeah, if I might say, you should shape the village the way you want it to be.
Yep.
And combustion engines are being basically put out of commission slowly but surely. So I'm sure people were going to push back. So did people who built buggies back in 1900.
Change is difficult.
Yeah. It's tough. It'll not be easy, and a lot of people will be upset, but that's the shape of the village we want it to be. So make it.
But I do think education, communication, as we've always learned, has to be really key. Instead of surprising people and saying, okay, they're going to be banned by the state or something, unless it's well in advance. But I just think that we ought to do it.
Yeah.
So,
but again, we statistically only have after surveying. So I think we're all in agreement that this is the direction we want to go. But it sounds we need to get more robust information about how to do it so that we minimize the disruption, not eliminate it. We know that's not going to happen, but it sounds like we want to make sure we minimize it. Communications, use of other municipalities that have done it, maybe how they did it. In addition to obviously Oak Park is important.
And I would also say, let's make sure that we address the problem here.
Yep.
The problem is not the need for gas blowers in the summertime. The problem as, the contractors actually say is that they only need them in the spring and fall cleanup. And I'm looking at the comments. One contractor says, we can absolutely remove gas-powered blowers during a mowing season. That's the spring or the summer. However, spring and fall cleanups with the amount of leaves that fall would be much more efficient with gas-powered blowers. And then another one says, we're currently working to introduce electric-powered equipment into our arsenal. We're on top of the latest trends in technology. That isn't to say it's an easy transition, as it presents a new set of challenges to the industry. These transitions must be handled responsibly, realistically, and with the provider in mind. We march toward the inevitable change because we want to be a leader in clean energy reform for the landscape industry. Why would we say you can keep using gas-powered mowers in the summer when they don't need them?
Yeah. I think there's consensus for that. It's just, I think, how to do it. I mean, Lisa, from your point of view, what does the Sustainability Commission, given that you've kind of liaised with them?
I haven't spoken to them about this because I've been out of town for some time. So, but I do think that there's a lot more data that they actually have within their possession that they haven't looked at. And I also think looking at the other village, like, again, let's learn from all those other municipalities that have gone before us, which will be able to accelerate how we do it. And yes, if you look at Evanston's is, you don't use it in the summer.
Yeah.
Look at Winnetka, don't use it in the summer. So that, kind of using it during when you need it and not using it when you don't need it. I mean, that's what those municipalities are doing. So there's certainly precedent. I think that the interesting thing is looking at
And this is where I don't have information on the pull-out ban. And I think Oak Park will certainly tell us, you know, where it's going to go. But I am concerned, as I think, with we don't want to negatively impact the residents. Yes, the big companies will have an easier time of making the transition than the small privately held, you know, the smaller guys. So let's figure out a way to make it equitable for everybody. And that's, I think, going to be the challenge. And yes, the big ones that have tried to make it, but the municipalities that have tried to make it easier. And again, they were the early adopters. So it's always when you're early, it's more money. They spend a lot of money to kind of to try to help them through it. But again, the batteries are not there yet. Unfortunately, you know, maybe Elon can focus on that.
Oh my gosh. All right.
One other thing just for the Sustainability Commission, Seth, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a conscious effort to include in the ordinance about the fact that the commission would want to revisit it. I think they're very conscious that there were a lot of other municipalities that were kind of taking the lead on this and wanted to, and the commission, because based on the feedback, wanted to be more incremental.
Yeah, the intent was to continue to revisit this on an annual basis as technology advances, not just with regards to leaf blowers, but with landscape technology as a whole. They wanted to be very clear that this is not just their final recommendation they are putting forward. This is just this year's recommendation through various feedback and beginning to look into this process.
Yeah. I would just invite the Sustainability Commission to consider a more direct ban with a longer lead time so that the businesses have a chance to build that into their business model as they, you know, exhaust gas powered machines. They can, knowing what River Forest is saying rather than just incrementalism, knowing that River Forest is going to, you know, have a ban in that's going to kick in a year and a half or 2 years, they can build that into their business model rather than replacing a gas powered machine with another gas powered machine, replace it with an electric.
And Katie, you make a great point in terms of enforcing too. If you just incrementally do this, then there's a huge enforcement that has to happen up front, right? Because you're incrementally doing it. And the half power ones is kind of, I don't know how you enforce that. Mm-hmm.
If this is what we want, let's just do it and give them a longer lead time so that they can plan. That's respectful.
Yeah. And make it, you know, equitable. Like, yeah, there are, give them, that's the lead time. You're giving people chances to
catch up. Some of these suburbs, that's why they're doing the summer part of it, is like, we're going to do that for the first year. And then you also like built into that is also like, and by 2026 or, you know, or for some 2025, because they've been working on this for a couple of years. Right?
Yeah. Right. And don't forget, the majority, I think, of these landscapers are operating in both of our communities, Oak Park and River Forest. So they have to make these changes for Oak Park already.
Yep. The big guys, for sure. For sure. Maybe even the small one. Yeah. Great. All great suggestions. Are we comfortable with, sending some of these suggestions?
I think it's a good conversation. I think
it's great.
Everybody, we're aligned on about the points.
I just want to make sure we are.
So that, just make everybody happy.
Try my best.
Well, you're doing it so good.
Right.
You're doing a good job.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. That was great. That was a good discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Seth.
Yeah, Seth. Okay, that finishes our business for regular session. And we'll need a motion to go into executive session.
Okay. I move to enter into executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C11 to discuss pending litigation, and the village board will adjourn after executive session and will not return to open session.
Second.
Okay. Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
President Adusi.
Yes.
Meeting adjourned.
Okay. No. Not adjourning.
Moving into executive session.